So I grew up on a lot of sayings as a boy in East Texas. And like maybe you can relate with this, but there were just some things that were said that didn't always make sense if you didn't have the context of it. And I think one of the things, I could name a bunch of them. One of the ones that I just thought about this week, and it's kind of funny, like why did we say that, was when you said nevertheless, like that phrase, well, nevertheless, it's like, well, what you're about to say means nothing, so why are you saying it? Like, it's just kind of a funny deal of this, but typically context meant a lot, and it was funny because one of the sayings I grew up hearing was, I'd rather be lucky than good, and I thought about that again this week. It's like, what does that really even mean, and do you really prefer to be lucky over good? And like, what's, and I'm just kind of an analytical person, so I just start analyzing it. Like, well, is it really better to be lucky than good? Or is it the opposite? And what does this mean? I think I actually Googled it, which I wouldn't suggest because it's bad, but it was just a waste of like 5 minutes that I'll probably never get back. But there's a lot of people that argued online about what this means. Like this phrase, I'd rather be lucky than good. What does that mean? And in this situation, it means this and all of that. But what I saw was a lot of different opinions. And really, when I was thinking about it, it's like, okay, what does that mean? And when did I hear it used? And most of the time, I heard this phrase used when things worked out better than you thought. And typically, it was something that was out of your control. Like, I'd rather be lucky than good was said when something that was kind of a coincidence happened. It was like when another team made a crucial mistake that cost them the game. I'd rather be lucky than good. When we're cutting down a tree at the farm and we kind of didn't gauge how the tree would fall and it just barely misses the tractor, it's like, yeah, I'd rather be lucky than good there. Or like when I'm fishing in a small John boat with one of my friends and he snags a fishing lure on a tree and he's yanking and yanking and finally it comes back and shoots back, misses my head. It's like, yeah, I'd rather be lucky than good. Like, I don't really know exactly what that means, but I know that in that moment, I'd rather be lucky than good. Why? Because it just seemed like those coincidences worked out where it's like, man, yeah, I'll take it. Like, I didn't have any control over this. I'll take it. And really, what we see about this and what I know about this statement, I'd rather be lucky than good, has a lot to do with timing and position. Like, it's not even as much luck. It's more about timing and position. And while it may seem like luck at first, like timing and position are important. And a lot of the times when we see this in our life, we can see that this is actually the result of God's sovereignty at work. And that kind of seems silly, but a story, especially the story I'm going to tell you, but about a year ago or so, we kind of schedule-wise worked better for us to go to the store at night after kids got to bed. So for me, it was like, okay, I'm going to go to Kroger, which another saying, like my grandma always called it Kroger's, and I still do that some. It's like, why are we adding an S to this? But I did, and I still do. It's just something that probably will never come out of me. But I go to Kroger, and so Kroger at night after 9 is a great time to shop. Like, I don't know if this is something you do. This is a life hack a little bit for you because, like, everything is stocked. There's not many people there, and you can, like, get in and get out, which, you know, again, life hack. Don't maybe take me up on it because then it'll ruin that. But anyway, I remember one of the first times I went and was going there in the middle of the night or after 9 and kind of going through and everything was stocked, including like the sale items for meat. You know, like all that was stocked. It was like, man, this is awesome. Like I've got a whole bunch of stuff to choose from. And I just thought, man, maybe this is just luck. Like, I wouldn't consider myself a very lucky person. I am fortunate, yes, but like as far as winning certain giveaways, like I always sign up for them because I'm just a sucker for that kind of thing and then never win anything. So I'm always unsubscribing from newsletters because it's like, well, maybe I'll win it this time. I don't know, maybe I'll. And so anyways, I'm just looking for luck, I guess. And in that moment, it was like, man, I'm lucky. Like I got lucky. And so I got this, and then about a week later, I went to the store again and realized the same thing happened. It was like, no, I'm not just lucky. They just stocked it for the next morning. Like, I'm really not that special. I didn't feel that special. But what I saw and realized through that was that my timing and position mattered about everything. Like, a time and a place, being at that time, in that place, like, that was where I found this. And this story that we're going to talk about today, the story of Queen Esther, is actually a lot like that in the sense that timing and position mean everything. Like, for her life, timing and position are important. And what we see in this story is this epic narrative with this unlikely hero, Queen Esther, and there's many different things that happen along the way. And so many times, like when we think about this lucky versus good and position and timing, like our decisions can impact this for sure. And I realize that my decisions can impact position and timing. But in this case, like, because I realize I don't have complete control over my always on my position and timing on things, like, I'd rather be lucky than good. Why? Because I realize that I can't know everything. My position or my perspective is limited. And so I can't always be in the right place at the right time. But what we know to be true about God is that he does know the right place and the right time. He does understand this from a different perspective, and he does see things that are in our life. He sees the whole picture. And a lot of the times, this timing isn't just about our luck or the decisions or a good string of decisions that we have. It's more about God working in the midst of things. It's about the bigger picture of God weaving kind of his story throughout our lives and weaving our lives into his story. And so when we think about that and talk about that, today's message, the story of Esther, is a story of God working both for and through Esther. But it's also a story to us, or a reminder for us to realize that God is working both for and through you. And so consider your time and your position. If you got your Bibles, go ahead and turn to Esther. We're going to be in the book of Esther, and this tells Esther's story. It's about 10 chapters. It's in the Old Testament. It's at the last section of history, kind of the books that describe history, and you'll find it just before the Psalms. So turn there to Esther chapter 4. We're going to start in verse 14. We're going to pick up kind of in the middle of the story, and then we'll go back a little bit to describe what's happening. This is Esther and Mordecai, her cousin, having a conversation. It says, "And who knows but that you have come to your royal position for such a time as this." It's actually Esther's cousin Mordecai talking to her, "And who knows but you that you have come to your royal position for such a time as this." And when you look at that, if you got your Bible, go ahead and circle those words, position and time. But he's asking her the question, hey, maybe you've been in this place for such a time as this, and I think that we as a church, and we'll talk about this in a little bit later, we as a church have been positioned for a time and a place as this. For time and place is this. Again, position and time mean a lot. But what about Esther's position made this important? And what was significant about the time? And to know her story, I want to go back to the beginning. Basically, Esther, Queen Esther, was a Jewish girl who was orphaned. She was actually living with her cousin Mordecai. Esther's living in Mordecai's house in this moment where they've been taken captive. And so this king of Persia was looking for a new queen. Esther was beautiful and lovely. His wife actually kind of outed him, and he decided to move on and get a new wife. And so Xerxes, the king, is looking for a new wife. And in the midst of this, Esther is described as beautiful and lovely. And this worked to her advantage. Why? Because of what we heard in the bumper earlier. But also what we see is that the king actually chose Esther. And so like what we said in this bachelor type of rendition, he basically pulls all these women together. They get special treatments and special times. And then there's kind of the final one that's chosen, and that's Esther. And through this process, it's kind of an interesting twist on the story, because through this process, what we see is that she was actually kind of flying under the radar throughout this whole deal, because she was a Jewish girl. And so she was chosen, but this the fact that she's Jewish hasn't really come to the surface. It hasn't really been announced yet. And so what's happening is she gets this position and power as a Jewish girl when her people, the Jewish people, God's chosen people, are under captivity. And so Xerxes was doing this, and this all happens. And then really kind of in this great time of vulnerability, what we see is that Esther is given this position of queen. But there's some more drama in this story. And if you read it, you'll see it. But palace guards one day, so Esther is queen now, and palace guards one day are outside talking. Her cousin Mordecai, who was helping to raise her, essentially, her cousin Mordecai is sitting outside, and it just so happened that Mordecai was there when he heard the palace guards talking about their plan to kill Xerxes. And in that day, as a king, anyone who was a threat to your empire was ultimately going to be killed. And this was a big deal. Like, you tried to keep all of these people who were conspiring against you away. And so what happens is Mordecai hears this and knows this, and he actually goes back and tells Queen Esther, who then tells the king, hey, these guys are going to kill you. They're hanged. And so this looks like a good deal. Like, this looks like something that is going to be a good thing for the Jewish people. Because now Mordecai is a little bit more highly regarded with this king Xerxes. And then it just gets more interesting. So the king's number two man, a guy named Haman, has this hatred for Mordecai. He heard this. He's probably maybe even getting some special attention from the king. And so now Mordecai is kind of this hated guy by Haman. But Haman also hates the Jewish people. And so what he does is he goes and convinces the king to just send out this decree that on one day, all of the Jewish people are going to be killed. And they didn't have like instant messaging. They couldn't just text everybody. And so they had this period of time where they wrote this decree out, sealed it with the king's seal, and then sent it out through messengers. And so this is starting to, kind of news is starting to travel. Like on this day, all Jews will be killed. And this is coming back to Mordecai. Mordecai knows that this is happening and just begins to go, okay, Esther, this is your time and place. And so Mordecai begins to have this conversation with Esther and begins to talk to her about what is happening and what maybe God was doing through this whole deal. And so what we see is their conversation in Esther chapter 4, verse 13 and 14. It's what we read a little bit earlier, but this is Mordecai saying, he sent back this answer. Do not think that because you are in the king's house, you alone of all the Jews will escape. So he's telling her she may be in danger, but also, for if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place, but you and your father's family will perish. And then what we read earlier, and who knows, but that you have come to your royal position for such a time as this. So it's interesting because we see this dialogue between Mordecai and Esther. We're in the midst of this moment where it seemed like all things were grim. It was a decree. It was already sent out. It's not something that you could just take back. Like, this is going to happen. And in the midst of this situation, here's Mordecai going, who knows, maybe Esther, you have been put in this position for such a time as this. For such a time as this, the position and timing is God working through this. And before we move on, to understand a little bit more about this book, the book of Esther, it doesn't ever represent, it doesn't ever mention God in it. It doesn't ever say God did this or spoke this or said this. It's a narrative that's written to describe coincidence after coincidence or what would seem like coincidence after coincidence. And so we don't really even see the miracles like that we hear about, like Noah and the flood happening or Jonah and the well that he was swallowed up in. Like, none of that's mentioned here. But what we see about Esther's story is that it is mentioned, these coincidences after coincidences. Like the whole Haman-Mordecai deal, Haman actually builds a pole to hang Mordecai. And when all of this gets foiled, Haman is actually hung on the pole that he created for Mordecai. Like, there's just coincidence after coincidence, and things after things keep happening. And so in spite of no direct mentions of God, we know that these are not all coincidences. Like, it's clear from the reader's perspective that God is working in and through all of these situations. It's more than just a decision, a string of like good decisions or luck. It's more than that. It's clearly directed and orchestrated from a bigger picture. And what Mordecai is pointing out in his conversation with Queen Esther is maybe it's for such a time as this that all of these other things have happened. And here's the deal. This is true with our lives too. Like, this is true for our lives too. And this is kind of where we can come into the story and see this. And so the thing that I want to ask you this morning is to consider the current position and timing of your life. Consider the current position and timing of your life and look to see what God may be doing through it. I mentioned earlier, like, there's no mention of God, but we can see from the reader's perspective that it's clear that God is working through all of these different scenarios and situations. The pastor, Tim Keller, calls this the silent sovereignty of God. This describing what we see as God's hand working through all this, someone with a bigger perspective, a better understanding of the whole picture of the whole situation, working in and through position and timing through people who are open to that. The other thing we see about this story too is that Esther is a woman in a male-dominated society. And in the midst of this, God uses this woman to go and bring about his plans. And this is significant and helpful to understand. Like in the Old Testament, New Testament alike, God elevates certain women in countercultural ways, making it clear that they are needed and their potential and significance in his kingdom. And so we see that here from this. But also what we see through Esther's life and her story is God not only working for this woman, blessing her as position, or blessing her in this position with the queen of Persia, but we also see God working through this woman. Because through Esther and through her willingness to let God use her, we see that, God's given her this God-given position in this time of need to actually save her country, save her people. And so in that same sense of us talking about what this means for our lives and what this means for, us here, the question I want to ask you is first, what is God working for you? What is God working for you? As you can consider your time, the position and timing of your life, what do you see God working for you in this moment? For Queen Esther, it was being queen. Here's the deal. Your story is still being written, and sometimes it's harder to see than that. Like I know when I, in the moment, it can be harder to see for me, but when I look back on the past 10 years of my life, I see people that I met and places that I went and things that I did that it was not my good decisions or my luck. It was the result of God working in and through my life for his purpose. And so the question is, where is God maybe sovereignly, though it may be silent, working for you? And maybe it's hard to see it. Like maybe you're not seeing or hearing from him, it feels like. Maybe it doesn't even feel like God's working. Why? Because God working in you or God working for you doesn't always look like the blessing we imagine. Like it doesn't always look like you being promoted to queen, or the result of God working isn't always to give you a higher position. That's harder to kind of wrap our minds around, our heads around. It makes it tough because in those moments where we go, man, in this position that I'm at currently, in my current position, current state, what God may be doing for me looks really tough and really hard. You may say, man, the point that I see or the position that I see God working through at this point right now doesn't feel lucky or good. And I can look back on my life in the hard seasons and see where God was working in and through those as well. And so I want you to be encouraged because he is, and be strengthened by this promise in Philippians 2. Philippians chapter 2, verse 13 says, "For it is God who works in you to will and to act in order to fulfill his good purpose." So what can we be sure of this morning? That one, that God is working. But two, that it's for God's will and purpose. And regardless of how it feels, we can bank on this promise that God will work in and through you for his good purpose. So then the second question, the thing that we see from the story of Esther is, are you allowing God, or how are you allowing God to work through you? How are you allowing God to work through you? He's working for us, for you, in accomplishing his purposes, even though they may be hard, especially in the hard. God's silently working. So lean into his grace. Don't run from him. Run to him. But what is your response? Go back to Esther, verse 4, or chapter 4, verse 16. This is Esther responding. "Go gather together all the Jews who are in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink." Why is she asking this? "Do not eat or drink 3 days, night or day. I and my attendants will fast as you do." Again, why was she asking this? Well, what we see here is that what she was being asked to do was something that was really hard. Because she says, "When this is done, I will go to the king, even though it is against the law. And if I perish, I perish." And so in Esther's response, we really get the weight of what's being asked of her. Like, yes, she was promoted in this position of leadership. It was kind of a miraculous thing. We saw God working in and for her life. But then when God was going to work through her, it got a little bit harder. She was going against the law. It was something that could have cost her her life. But I love her response, and I love what we can learn from it. She was responding with faith. Like if she failed, she failed. She was trusting, though, in the fact that God was in control. It was out of her control, but this was in God's hands. And so in the midst of this story, what we see about Esther is she could have either ignored the problem because it may not have even affected her. She was in a good spot. But she was open to God using her. And man, let's not miss this. Let's not miss this about Esther's story. Be open to God using the position and timing of your life, no matter how good or bad it seems, to work through you. And so go back to the first thing I asked you to do this morning, which was to consider your timing and your position. Go back to that. The timing and position of your life, in the low points of your life, in the hard moments and seasons of your life, ask the question, what is God trying to teach you? What are you seeing and what needs to be done? And in the high points of your life, ask the same questions. Because here's what we know.